State Senator John Gorder, 27th District, great Berwick Republican person, family man, a man of great faith. And
unexpected caller.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for calling in. Let's talk about redistricting.
Yeah, the maps.
This idea that the state Supreme Court says, hey, we're going to hire a cartographer and a demographer, and we're going to work on this.
Well, again, it's frustrating, frankly. There's, again, two processes that goes on. You do the congressional maps through actual legislation, through a bill that then needs to be signed by the governor. And then the redistricting for state house and state senate is done through the Legislative Reapportionment Commission. But in regard to the congressional maps, there were attempts starting back in, I think, October or November to ask the governor or his staff to get in a room and to try to start drawing maps. As is well known, we had to eliminate a congressional seat this year because of population loss, so there's going to be somewhat of a challenge. And unfortunately, the governor refused to negotiate with the House, refused to negotiate with the Senate in trying to come up with a mutually agreeable map. So the House ultimately took a citizen's map, Amanda Holt, who the Democrats praised, 10 years ago in regard to her map. The governor doesn't like her map this time, and said it was unacceptable. We ended up, basically taking what the House did and sent it to the governor. The governor vetoed it, so that started this whole court process. A Commonwealth Court judge has been having hearings. The Supreme Court, I think, on Wednesday demanded that the Commonwealth Court submit her map to them by Monday, along with the reasoning behind it, and then they will ultimately, as they did 4 years ago, decide what the map is. Again, what happened 4 years ago was the Supreme Court hired a Stanford law professor to draw a map. So rather than the popularly elected legislature or the governor weighing in and coming up with some sort of compromise, the map we currently have was drawn by a Stanford law professor from California, which is one of the most gerrymandered states in the country, and we may end up with the same thing this time.
I'm curious, John. We heard about the Commonwealth Court and what their ruling was, and then the news media always says, and the Commonwealth Court is dominated by Republicans, it will be appealed to the state Supreme Court, which has a 7-3 or whatever majority of Democrats.
5-2.
How political are our courts, and is that something we should try to stop, or stop the politicization of the courts?
Well, I don't know that our state Supreme Court's any different than the U.S. Supreme Court. You would hope that, we try to believe that our U.S. Supreme Court is non-political, but I think people would disagree on that. So I think the courts here in Pennsylvania, especially at the Supreme Court level, are political as well.
We have constitutional amendments that are pending. Are there any particular ones that are going to be on the spring ballot coming up that we should be looking for?
No.
Okay, so none of those.
Governor Wolf is almost to someone by the name of Governor Schapp in regard to vetoes, and I think he will surpass Governor Schapp this year. So it's been very frustrating. In the past, and I'll just mention another Democratic governor, Rendell. Rendell's administration was very active in regard to negotiating with the legislature and getting things done. And actually, he personally would sit in on those meetings and try to negotiate deals, because he was a deal maker, so to speak, which I don't think is a bad thing. Governor Wolf, his administration will not negotiate. And then when you send him something that's unacceptable, he'll veto it and then try to do stuff by executive order. And it's just becoming more and more and more and more frustrating that the governor's doing things by executive order rather than negotiating. He just refuses to do it, and his administration obviously doesn't have the authority to do it. And so we're attempting to do some things through constitutional amendment and let the people decide.
What about his legacy? I mean, you would think he would want to leave a legacy in his final years in office of, working collaboratively with the legislature, showing how things can get done, how things can be good, and how government can actually be effective.
His legacy, to the extent there is a legacy, is going to be education funding-wise. I think he decided early on that's what he ran on when he ran against Corbett with information that really wasn't correct. We never cut state funding to education, but the federal funding that was part of the Obama monies went away. I think the media has finally understood that. But I think that's going to be his legacy. He made a big announcement yesterday in regard to where to use some America Rescue Plan monies. And next Tuesday will be his budget address, so we'll find out what his thoughts are in regard to this final year.
And what has the legislature ever sent him bills that you knew he would veto? You sent them there just so he would veto them. We sort of hear that criticism that some were just, to so that you could very accurately
message
paint him
bills
as the individual who vetoes everything that comes to his desk.
I mean, you could argue that anytime we send a gun bill or a pro-life bill, we know he's going to veto. And, in frankness, those are bills that we understood that he's not going to negotiate. So we just sent a preemption bill to him, and I think he vetoed it already. But it's a bill, it's already in state law that, municipalities can't decide gun laws, that it has to be done statewide and uniformly. So that was a bill that we know that he was going to veto, but there are so many, especially that dealt with the COVID-19 state of emergency, that we'd hope that he'd get actively involved in, or this congressional one, or just some other type of bills that, he waited till the very last moment and said, I can't support that bill in this fashion. But wouldn't get involved to say how it could be changed in order that he would sign it. So it just become very frustrating.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the congressional maps. What about the House and Senate maps? Are any less controversial situations there?
Well, certainly the belief was back in December, at least in regard to the state Senate map, that things would be fairly smooth. As you folks probably know, the vote back in December for the state Senate map was 5-0, and the vote on the state House map was 3-2. I know the House Republicans very, very, very upset with the map that was agreed to, and it was really strange. In the days after that, Chancellor, who's the chairman of the committee, said it wasn't his map. The House Democratic leader said it wasn't her map. But it had to be someone's map that got put out there. It certainly wasn't the House Republicans' map. Since then, they've had hearings, 4 days worth of hearings. They've received, I think, thousands of comments. And now there's behind-the-scenes negotiations. There was supposed to be a meeting last Friday, but unfortunately the chancellor has changed the Senate map a decent amount. And so there wasn't, I don't think, enough votes to consider it. The meeting is now scheduled for tomorrow, and there's been changes in the map almost every day this week, and so I don't know what it looks like at the moment. The good news for the 27th senatorial district is that it's consistently kept Columbia, Montour, Northumberland, Snyder together, but then it's played around at various times over the last 2 weeks. It's had Luzerne, it's had Dauphin, or it's had Union. So it's just interesting to see how the process goes.
Well, tell me about your view on the mail-in voting issue. I think Republicans weren't happy that the bill that they promoted and you voted for and signed into law helped so many Democrats. But guess what? You get a reprieve. Your view and reaction on all this?
I voted for the legislation back in 2019. There were a number of different things in it, and one of the things that it got rid of was straight party voting. Frankly, speaking politically, for those of us that have some representation in the southeastern part of the state and with Trump at the top of the ticket, We wanted to get rid of the straight party voting so that people would have to look at each office to decide who they wanted. And I think, frankly, although we lost the president's spot in 2020, we picked up for the first time in 50 years two state row offices in state treasurer and state auditor general. And I absolutely believe that couldn't have happened without eliminating the straight party voting option. So that was one of the trade-offs that happened in regard to expanding voting by mail. And it's interesting. I looked at the Commonwealth Court decision, which was 3-2, and the Republicans relied on one section of the Constitution, and the Democrats relied on a different part of the Constitution. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Supreme Court says, although we assume that the Supreme Court, now they've scheduled arguments for March. They provided a stay, so absentee balloting, no excuse absentee balloting, will continue until the Supreme Court makes the final decision.
Will Republicans do this again, given the opportunity? Let's suppose the overturning sticks, which it sounds like it would. Will you do that again?
Oh, I don't know that the overturning is going to stick with the state Supreme Court and a 5-2 majority on the Democrats. Again, they've provided a stay of the Commonwealth Court's decision. And there's oral arguments in March. Certainly the May, or at this point, I think the May election date's probably going to be have to be postponed just because of all the wrangling that's going on. But certainly no excuse to absentee balloting will continue. Look, as Republicans and as our caucus, we think a number of changes need to be made. And we continue to be incredibly disappointed with the decisions by the Department of State in 2020, as well as the directions of the Supreme Court in 2020, where they very actively changed statute. The one provision they said, we're going to change this provision just for the 2020 election. That was a 4-3 decision. And then change it back after the 2020 election. That's just mind-blowing.
Let me ask you this question. With the governor being somewhat intransigent on some things and the fact that the House and Senate are still dominated by Republicans, what are the chances we're going to get anything substantive done in an election year coming up?
You know, the biggest thing we do, though, is a budget. And, you know, I go back to Ed Rendell. Ed Rendell, 8 years, we never passed a budget on time once. Because he was always asking for this and that and the other thing. And while we had that issue, if you remember, in the first year or so of the Wolf administration, where we went beyond a year without a budget, since then we've been able to get a budget on time each of the last, 6 years. And that's really the biggest thing we do in regard to, largeness. The numbers are great coming in. I think $1.5 billion over estimates. We still have a lot of the majority of the American Rescue Plan money. So really, the biggest thing we could do is get a budget done on time again this year, which I hope that we'll do, and to figure out where all the American Rescue Plan money did. We just had a agreement of sending $225 million. I think roughly to hospitals, and not strictly to hospitals, but to hospitals for frontline workers. So it's not going into the hospital's bottom line. It's the agreement that passed the House unanimously, the Senate unanimously, the governor signed it immediately to get to the frontline workers who are on the floors taking care of patients and overwhelmed, but should get extra compensation for what they're doing.
Anything we can do here in Pennsylvania to curb inflation, or has that just got to be a federal issue?
I think that's a federal issue.
You can borrow and spend and send everybody a lot of money if you want it to get worse. So, are you weighing in on this U.S. Senate race or the gubernatorial race at all? You would be the Republican leader who's not currently a candidate for one of those offices, so thank you for that. But and you and Kim Ward aren't running, but everybody else is. So, any thoughts on this race? I know you don't endorse people, so I know that's not coming. But thoughts on this great field of Republicans running?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's exciting in some degree. I think it's, you know, too large. You always wait to see once the petition period ends and see where people are and on the ballot. You know, the governor's race is one where you have to get folks from so many different counties to get a minimum amount of signatures. So while there's a large number on both of those races, Senate and governor, it'll be interesting to see come mid-March or so who's actually on the ballot, and once you get ballot position and stuff like that, who sticks. But I think we've got some good candidates on both sides. And it's interesting. It was interesting to see what happens. It just happened with Lamb and Fetterman and the other state rep on the Democratic side. And, you know, our committee meeting is this weekend. I also don't think we're going to have an endorsement just because of the sheer number. I can't imagine anyone getting to the number that they need to get to, but we'll know better on Saturday of this week.
Are you a big Dr. Oz fan? Joe is. Joe gets a warm feeling every time we talk about him.
You know, the only person, I've not met Dr. Oz. I know he was at an event this past week in Harrisburg, or a week ago in Harrisburg. I didn't see him. I did get a chance to meet David McCormick. Mm. My wife had a nice conversation with him. My wife was a graduate of the last class of the Bloomsburg State College in 1983, before July 1983, when it became Bloomsburg University. And, of course, Jim McCormick was the president there at Bloomsburg University, while Lori was a student there. And then he became the first chancellor of the state system. But I enjoyed talking with Dave McCormick, very personable. He's got some support from some of the heavier hitters in our state. I saw, for what it's worth, I saw Ted Cruz did a fundraiser for him in the Lehigh Valley. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, until President Trump decides who he's going to push for, you have to settle for Ted. So, all right. Well, thank you so much, John. Thanks for calling
in.
We appreciate that. You got an open mic anytime to bring us up to date on these important topics.
Yeah, just the most exciting thing for me this year is going to be the opening of the bridge and the northern section of the CSVT. I'm not sure if either of you guys are familiar with that project.
We've heard of it.
I think by August or so, that whole thing's going to be open.
Well, and of course, we saw, tragically, the bridge collapse out in Pittsburgh, and John Fetterman was campaigning out there with some of his nicest gym shorts I saw, so that worked out nicely. I thought, geez.
It was, just a quick comment on that, it was funny that before that happened, he was not going to be available to attend because, and maybe you guys have already talked about that, because he had a scheduling conflict.
Right.
And then, lo and behold, the bridge collapses, and instead of heading to the gym, he heads to the bridge to meet with the president. So we now know what his scheduling conflict was.
Going to the gym.
Right, the YMCA. All right, thanks so much, John. Really appreciate the call.
Take care.
All right, nice talking to you guys. Bye.
Thank you. State Senator John Gorner, 27th District, good Republican in Harrisburg, State Senate Majority Whip.